Are you looking for an essential survival tool you didn't know existed? Introducing two new devices from thelibertyman.com. The Paratrooper Bicycle is the same bike issued to U.S. paratroopers in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's a folding bike, specifically engineered for airdrop from military aircraft, and is olive drab in color. The Swiss LX Bicycle is the same bicycle issued to the U.S. Secret Service and Special Ops for use in covert operations. This folding bicycle is matte black. Just unfold the bike, secure the four quick-release levers, put air in the tires, and you're on your way. These are full-size mountain bikes with full-size 26-inch standard wheels, and they cost less than off-the-shelf standard quality mountain bikes. The bikes fold to 12 by 28 by 36 inches in under 30 seconds without tools. This bike weighs in at a mere 29 pounds. Its compact size allows for storage anywhere. The Paratrooper and Swiss LX bicycles have patented technology not available from any other company. To place your orders, call 800-592-9543 day or night. For more information or to place orders online, go to www.thelibertyman.com.
The Micro Effect. The Micro Effect Broadcasting Network.
This is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio, and we are back on the air. George has left us, George Green. He was our guest the first hour, and he had a meeting to attend to. But we are very grateful that he was able to take time out of his New Year's Eve to join us. We are still on the air with Dr. Waterman, I believe, and we should have Neil Freer on the line as well with us now. Neil, are you there?
Yes, good evening. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. It's lovely to hear your voice. And I know it was extremely last minute. You sent me an email on another matter, and I just thought, wow, this was an opportunity. I had an opening. A couple of people I was planning to have on were unable to come on board here today. So you're really kind of saving our life. so to speak. So I do appreciate that. And I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Waterman. This is not his real name, but he's are you there, John?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, okay, great. And I don't know if you're familiar with Neil Freer, but he has a website called neilfreer.com. And he's a very actually, he's a very fascinating thinker, I think.
Great.
Hi, John. That's hard to live up to.
Well, I don't know. You know, and I think that perhaps we can. We were just kind of wrapping up. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to the section with George and with John before you came on board here, Neil.
No, I didn't.
Okay, but Dr. Waterman is a doctor, among other things, and he's also was head of the militia movement a while back in a certain state, and he's also what else can I say? He has a special forces background at one time, and has also worked for NASA in certain capacity. So I think you could probably relate to some of his background there. But Dr. Waterman has his own radio show at this time, and we were just kicking around some of the predictions that he is making for the next year. And I was just going to let him finish up here. So, Dr. Waterman, you want to finish with the last few ones you were talking about?
Oh, okay,
there.
Sure, I can do that. One of my predictions that I didn't really get into a lot was about the pandemic. We're in somewhat of a natural easing of the H1N1 virus, except for the mutated, whether it was delivered or not, I think it was delivered, strain in the Ukraine, where there's over 3.5 million sick, quarter million are hospitalized, almost 700 are dead. But what's really disturbing is that the new revival of this threat is coming from a mutation in the genetics that indicates this change in the genetics is 100% fatal. Now, that's got me concerned from the standpoint of, I'm not trying to cast fear because there are some options. And we say 100% fatal because that's what they think because they use the existing medical model. And I believe there are options, of course, that I used. And, of course, they tried stopping bringing in those remedies into the United States today, just bringing in, but we outsmarted them. But my other predictions are that China will take over huge sectors of the American assets and infrastructure and paint in lieu of the default on the dollar by, you know, well, George says spring. I was saying by fall. I hope I'm right. I hope he's wrong. I hope both of us are wrong. Also, if you want to call it terrorist attacks, I think we're seeing this new wave is actually a visible result of some the same agenda that brought us Oklahoma City, 911, and of course has been is being brought to us by the same group. This isn't a real threat that can't be the real threat cannot be detected by these machines at the airport. The real threat is an agenda with a bad intent. And I always said, and you'll have to excuse this expression, I think most Americans have detectors, and we call them bullshit detectors. I think they know it's a bunch of
crap. Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. The man that was let on the airplane in Amsterdam without a passport was getting some special treatment right there. That no one I know, and certainly not myself, and I travel in Europe all the time, are going to be able to get away with. So there's definitely some food for thought there. But thank you for your predictions.
That was my last. Food issues will start being brought about when we approach harvest next fall. We're going to see prices on food escalate. That's it. That's my list.
Well, Neil, do you have any reaction to those things? And then, of course, you could basically kind of launch into something, whatever you'd like to talk about this evening.
Well, I am prompted to offer, with regard to the so-called foreign terrorist attacks, that I would remind those listening that don't know that I understand that about 2 years ago or so, John, you may know more precisely, that the Bush clan purchased 111,000 acres of Paraguay, and I assume that that's an escape country. And I had this brill flash the other day that when things got too hot and they jumped on their private jets and headed for down there, that maybe they would stop for gas in Venezuela. Get sent back in irons by Chavez.
Oh.
By Chavez.
Very, very amusing. Right. unless they're flying a Chinese jet, right, in which case they would be given gas gladly by the Venezuelans, apparently.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah,
I'm sorry, We need some humor around this obscene situation out there.
No doubt about it. I have to say that Neil Freer has a... do you want to talk a little bit about your premise that has to do with futants and sort of a... You're kind of a futurist, I think, perhaps you might even consider
my business card says generalist, and it's like a kind of a cop-out cover for a stand-up philosopher and futurist in this case. And my focus is I try to stay focused planetarily. And so the basic thesis that I'm putting out right now, and I put out in Sapiens Rising, The View from 2100, an e-book only published on Kindle just a little while ago, people say that's sort of an arrogant title. Well, it's true, but it's a nasty job. Somebody's got to do it. And the basic thesis is quite simple, that all things considered, from all the information that we have acquired from contactees, researchers, and government whistleblowers, and Project Camelot, and exopolitics, and all that kind of good stuff, is that we're basically the overall biggest picture is that we're being invited to stellar society, and we've also been given the rules for matriculation, and that are, they are, that it's pretty clear again, you don't take weapons into space, kids, and you matriculate, you get accepted into stellar society as a united, peaceful, halfway mature species, or you don't go. And we've been communicated with a number of advanced species, whether it be the Yargans or the Verdants or whomever. And I think that premise is pretty clear. And I think, too, that when it comes to understanding the agendas of the alien species, we can pick up from Jim Mars, we can pick up from a number of people, and Stephen Greer seems to be the most controversial at this particular point, because there's two schools of thought relative to his premise that the alien species don't need anything from us, and they first contacted, really, and showed themselves to the military, because the military is friend or foe, and charged with defending the nation and the militaries of the world, defending their particular countries. And so they realized that they were the most dangerous and tricky to deal with, so they gradually insinuated themselves into the military's cognizance, to the point where they realized that there isn't a damn thing they could do about advanced technologies, to the extent that, as Bob Dean said, the NATO commander he was under over there in the Cold War threw his hat on the desk after he had read the report, the top secret report, or above top secret report, threw his hat on the desk and said, well, I'm going to retire. There's nothing we can do about these people. So they got, some of the generals got the message pretty quick, and other ones have, you know, attempted to shoot them down and that sort of thing. But I think we're in a second stage at this particular point. We are now seeing, and I think, as I mentioned to you today, Kelly, that the work of...
my name's Carrie, but that's okay.
I'm sorry, Carrie. Carrie, yes.
Yeah, no, we're having an issue with my name tonight, but that's fine. I'm sure. I don't mind repeating it a few times.
Well, I think the issue is on my part here. I'm sorry about that. It's K-E-R-R-Y. You know,
that's correct.
Meal. And so we're at second stage, I think, at this particular point, where the contact and negotiations and demonstrations of technology and intention and agenda is being focused on the, I guess you could say, the industrial, economic, and money power players arena. And if Borden and Gordon are correct, the negotiations are for food and foodstuffs and that sort of thing for visiting alien societies. And I think that's pretty much a gambit to demonstrate to them that they are open to trade and negotiations, and we could do it pretty much without fear.
Well, that's only if we're not the source of food.
Well, that's true. That's true. And
and certainly it would be interesting to hear your take on this, John, because I know that you have a bit of a background. You were just alluding to that in some form or fashion in terms of, I guess, Area 51 or whatever, S4.
Well, yes. There's been this discussion about a rumor that there was a meeting outside of Hawaii with the Navy, Obama, and extraterrestrials. I want to back up and say, though, that I kind of subscribe off to the opposite thoughts of Greer. I mean, we have too much evidence that they are not benevolent, all of them. We have men stand in front of us that have arms that are shot off, talking to us, that have been shot at, destroyed, tried to be killed, but weren't. So I think we have to presume that, you know, just like on this planet, there are good and bad intentions. So in the meantime, my thoughts on it is that I'm going to be following up on this. There's a retired man, I can't say of what agency, because there's only one of them, and that would identify him. And I'll be able to get some information about whether that's even been the case in the past. And when I find out, I'll let you know. But I don't know.
What do you mean that's been the case in the past? What's been the case?
Well, the
in
Navy.
The past?
My particular one is my particular contact. I will say is Navy, and I will be able to know whether or not if he'll admit it, if they've been making contact, like has been rumored. So
okay. Well, you were relating the incident to do with the Johnston Atoll. That
yes.
There was some triangulation of various government officials who were, by what seemed to be coincidence, flying over that area all at the same point in time, which
right.
was actually just about a week or two ago. And
right.
We have a whistleblower who was talking to me about the fact that although there was an item that was released by Victor Martinez, who has that news group and relates things a lot to the Serpo.org story, which is packed with disinfo, as most people know at this point. But they were talking about something that went on in November around the Johnston Atoll. But my understanding from the whistleblower I was talking to is that there was a more recent negotiation going on there, and that is a sort of a meeting place that is conveniently out of the way of your customary society and being able to sort of operate without, any kind of normal population oversight. And so that's why that particular location is chosen. Neil, I don't know if you've heard about that, but I was told that some of the negotiations going on there were with negative ETs, and that they were negotiating some not very pleasant things. And I can go into a little more detail at my end, but before I do that, I'd like to know if you'd heard anything about that.
I have heard only in general about it, and not the details. And I would like to clarify my own position at this particular point. I'm coming basically from the same perspective that you are, John. I think it's only reasonable, right, and just to assume that there are ones with lesser intentions and some with very benevolent and high intentions, but we damn well ought to watch our butts and make people ask for credentials, ask for a statement of intent, an agenda, all kinds of things to verify as best we can what their intentions and agendas are. And also to provide ourselves with whatever, probably pitiful, but with whatever kind of protection we can, providing, for the whole planet. In other words, we ought to just exercise good common sense and assume that there are bad guys and good guys until proven differently. Gary, the details would be very interesting to me if you could give me a few.
Well, okay, and, you know, I have to say that I am not 100% sure that this is accurate information. I have to say that it was given to me by a whistleblower, and it was not actually given to me directly, but more in a code.
Okay.
So, and that's how some of our whistleblowers operate a lot of the times.
Can't blame them.
Simply because, you know, we are all under surveillance. You know, the technology is so obvious at this point and so kind of all-encompassing that it's pretty hard to conduct a conversation without some surveillance operating in various ways. In fact, there is some artificial intelligence and some other levels of surveillance that that one of our whistleblowers talked about as well. So that's a whole another ball game. But what we were told is that there is a negotiation to resume some of the negative abductions, and that there is also some population reduction that the members of the Illuminati want to proceed with. And basically, and I don't know beyond that, other than there were discussions being had on those premises. It's kind of bizarre to think about. if you'd like to kind of cast your mind down that road, to be thinking that the fate of humanity is being discussed among, you know, high-level people, members of the Illuminati and other ET races that would be maybe termed Anunnaki or reptilian or whatever, and that they are deciding to some degree to negotiate our freedoms away, in essence, in some of these meetings they're having.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty diabolical scenario to even think about. I mean, I have to say that I have an overall positive view, simply because I know that we have an incredible amount of positive ET, extra-dimensional, intradimensional, call them what you will, light beings, et cetera, that are also sort of rooting for us and protecting us and so on and so forth. But there is no doubt that here in 3D reality, there are some predator species out there.
Sure.
So that's the extent of what I heard recently.
Okay. And I put that up against all the other things that I've heard about the negotiations, and that's why just today I asked you if you had any more details or sources so that I could evaluate Borden and Gordon, the two fellows that say that matter-of-factly that there are groups of humans who have been private, outside the government, who have been negotiating with a group of aliens basically once a year. The last meeting was in an Anunnaki boomerang-shaped craft over Phoenix, and they're being told by these aliens, but they're given a lot of good physics and technology. They are also being negotiated using these humans as representatives of the species, and the negotiations are for basically how to improve ourselves to get accepted into stellar society. So we have this whole spectrum. I mean, this is, I'm not saying this to contradict anybody, but I'm trying to put all these pieces together and get some kind of overall overview, and it's not an easy task, because we're Babel factored. Who do you believe? Who's telling you the truth? who are the sources, and you know, is a whistleblower a real whistleblower, or is he an expert disinformation operative? And you could lose sleep over it, but I'm not anymore. I'm just putting it all down and looking for correspondence, correlations, and contradictions.
Absolutely. Do you want to add anything to this, Waterman?
Yeah, I think that what he's talking about is that over a period of time, if you analyze the information, you're going to see an agenda that really pops up. And as you begin to identify it, no, it's not a figment of your imagination. It actually exists. I mean, just like earlier you all were talking about a communication system. Well, I know of a classified communication system. It was built with Andrews Corporation providing the microwave dishes, and Grosses, who since then has merged with Andrews, which is out of Chicago. And they have a secondary communication system, and it's built on towers, and they are in the old silos for the missiles. And there's a northern route, a middle route, and a southern route across the United States. They're going to pop tops off of them. If it goes down, the towers are going to come up. They're already aligned, and they're going to reestablish their communications. And it won't be this nice, pretty-sounding drop of the pen sounds like they're coming out of the other room. It'll be back like it was in the 60s. So that's there. It's in place. So, yeah, there are certain times when you have to say, gosh, what is what's real, what's not real? How can you verify it? Well, in the intelligence community, they usually start searching for at least 10% probability and three separate sources that they hope are independent of each other. And when they get those ingredients in the mix, they start considering whatever information they're looking at as credible, and of course then react accordingly. So I think it's pretty obvious we have an agenda. My opinion about the ETs are different from somebody that says, why would they want to hurt us? If they wanted to, they could. And what do they want from us? Because they don't need anything. I think they need something, and I don't think they have free will to completely, that's the bad ones, have their way with us. So somewhere along the way, I think there's an issue called free will, and I think that has to be part of the initiative, because I do not think they're sovereign over this planet. I think they're trying to gain sovereignty, and we see a lot of the remnants of them in our government, in our agencies, in our military, and so forth, trying to make that happen. So that's just my two cents on that.
Yeah, well, that's a great summation there, and I have to agree with you on most all of that, and I'd love to pick up on the other side of the bottom of the hour here and talk more about that. This is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio, and we're here with Neil Freer and Dr. John Waterman, his alias. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for an essential survival tool you didn't know existed? Introducing two new devices from thelibertyman.com. The Paratrooper Bicycle is the same bike issued to U.S. paratroopers in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's a folding bike, specifically engineered for airdrop from military aircraft, and is olive drab in color. The Swiss LX Bicycle is the same bicycle issued to the U.S. Secret Service and Special Ops for use in covert operations. This folding bicycle is matte black. Just unfold the bike, secure the four quick-release levers, put air in the tires, and you're on your way. These are full-size mountain bikes with full-size 26-inch standard wheels, and they cost less than off-the-shelf standard quality mountain bikes. The bikes fold to 12 by 28 by 36 inches in under 30 seconds without tools. This bike weighs in at a mere 29 pounds. Its compact size allows for storage anywhere. The Paratrooper and Swiss LX bicycles have patented technology not available from any other company. To place your orders, call 800-592-9543 day or night. For more information or to place orders online, go to www.thelibertyman.com.
Jesse James, the famous outlaw, lived to be 103. Jesse James was elected a United States Senator for one term from Montana. Jesse James poisoned John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of President Abraham Lincoln, in 1903. Las Vegas is the county seat of Clark County, Nevada, and it is named after William Andrews Clark, the alias of Jesse James. Jesse James was involved in the creation of the Ku Klux Klan in 1867. Jesse James knew that the Civil War in America was fought over the issue of a central bank. Jesse James arranged the murder of General George Custer at the Little Bighorn River. This is Ralph Epperson, and if these claims are unknown to you, you have not watched my four-hour DVD entitled Jesse James Lived to Be 103. Visit my website at ralph-epperson.com for the details.
The time is now. As the walls are closing in on America, Republic Magazine is a beacon of light guiding those that fight for freedom and the restoration of America. Republic Magazine is the ultimate activist tool. Republic Magazine digs in deep to expose the lies and offers real solutions from the experts. No other publication in America offers the real news like Republic Magazine. Get copies to give to friends, family, and neighbors, or simply order a subscription for yourself at republicmagazine.tv. Get informed and stay informed with Republic Magazine, the ultimate resource for your fight against the New World Order. Claim your free digital copy now or order a print subscription online at www.republicmagazine.tv. That's republicmagazine.tv. Or call them toll-free at 800-873-1620. That's 1-800-873-1620.
Prisoner, rise and answer my question.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, it's a little dark in here, ain't it, Clink, now that you've busted the light?
Where are you?
Right in front of you.
Now, where have you hidden the wax figurine of the Kaiser?
I've got no bloody idea what you did with your wax figurine, and I don't care.
You are the prisoner.
That's right, and as such, I expect some answers out of you. Now, where did you put my stash of freeze-dried food?
We ate it.
You ate it?
It was quite good.
I'm sure it was. I'll have you know that was freeze-dried food from the freeze-dry guy. That food rehydrates faster, stores longer, is nutritionally superior to, and tastes better than any other long-term storage food available. Now, let me out of here.
If you could get us some more, perhaps we could negotiate.
Yeah, perhaps I'll just confiscate your keys, Klaus, and let myself out the front door.
But wait.
I'm busy.
Get your own supply of delicious long-term storable food by dialing 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
This is The Micro Effect. The Micro Effect Broadcasting Network.
Okay, this is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio, and we are here with Neil Freer and Dr. John Waterman, and this is New Year's Eve, and we're on the last half hour of the show. If there are any callers out there, I apologize to the ones that we're holding, and we weren't able to get you on the, you know, bring you on the show here. We will try to pick up calls maybe in the last 15 minutes. But perhaps we can continue our discussion here for at least a few more minutes. John and Neil, you've both raised some very interesting topics along the lines of, you know, what is going on out there and also thinking about it in terms of the future, the negotiations that are happening without our consent. And what that all amounts to. I know, Neil, that you are also a fan of Sitchin's work, and I imagine that you're also you also know Bob Dean fairly well, isn't that right?
Yeah, Bob Dean I consider a very good friend. I've known Bob for quite a while. He's interviewed me for his series of videotapes and stuff, but he's been here to visit, and good friend. And I have great respect for the man.
And I also noticed that you quote from the Arlington Institute, and there's an individual there, forget his name offhand.
John Peterson.
John Peterson. Is he also a friend of yours?
Good friends with John, and he invited me in a few years ago to actually do a presentation at the Arlington Institute, and that was quite an experience because there were Pentagon people, mostly in civvies, in the audience, and I had no idea what kind of reaction I would get putting out the stuff that I was putting out, and which brings me back to your mention of Zechariah Sitchin's work. I've known Zechariah Sitchin's work and him actually since 1976 when he first came out with his book, The 12th Planet. And the reason why I found him quite fascinating and also very much on target is because it's been my conviction and my thesis for quite a while that one of the ways, regardless of whether of what kind of alien species is approaching us, if we allow ourselves to think of ourselves being invited to stellar society and having to interact with the aliens and actually matriculate into stellar society on the basis of being a united, peaceful planetary species, then Sitchin's work is to the point because the major factor that keeps us, as I call it, Babel factor, split, divided, separate, suspicious of each other, and in conflict continually, the basic is religion. If we put Zechariah Sitchin's work together with that of Sir Lawrence Gardner, I think the two of them together have given us the means to totally rewrite and understand at least Western history, if not the entire planet, in a totally different way. And we can see that the major religions are simply a sublimation of the ancient master-slave relationship that we were genetically engineered for by the Anunnaki when they were here. As a genetically engineered species, as a slave species to work in their gold mines.
Have you, by chance, read the work of Michael Tellinger, who in some ways is kind of following in the footsteps of Sitchin, I would say?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Okay. It sounds like maybe you don't quite agree that he's following in Zachariah's footsteps. What would be your take on Tellinger's work, if you don't mind saying, at least in general terms?
Well, I think substantially, I'm going to back off here. There's so much work out there, what's de Lafayette, for instance, out of France, who, as a friend of mine said the other day, pumps books out like sausages, and he's talking of, he's writing about the genealogies of the Anunnaki, and right down to the point where I noticed in his table of contents of his latest book, he's saying that the Anunnaki had no genitals, and I'm thinking, well, okay.
Well, that's kind of going off on a limb. Wonder, though, because it sounds like, you follow Zachariah Sitchin's work and you kind of agree with most of it, if I get you right.
I substantially, having worked with him, worked with his information since 1976 and trying to take it apart piece by piece on a critical basis, and try also to verify and to correlate with other stuff, I think that I have to say yes. I substantially agree with Zechariah. I don't agree on one or two points, because I think, for instance, with the identification of Yahweh, Zechariah is still a practicing Jew, as he says, and although he says that the God of the Old Testament was an alien who rode around in his own private spaceship, he leaves it at that and says that he was not an Anunnaki, though. He was the God of the Anunnakis. Okay. I think that Sir Lawrence Gardner, for instance, has shown, elucidated that particular item very well, and realizes, and I think we should realize, that he is correct in saying that the God of the Old and the New Testament, of the Jewish and the Christian religions, is, as he, masculine, is called in the Old Testament, Elohim, is actually two individuals, Enki and Enlil, both Anunnaki, because Elohim is plural.
Okay, some reason you're cutting out. I'm not hearing you. I don't know if anyone else is. John, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Am I okay now?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, John. I think maybe they've cut out at the station.
Okay. Are you guys there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Carrie.
That was very interesting. So apparently the two of you were left on the air and I was cut out. Is that what happened there?
Yeah.
That's happened every show so far. I was wondering if we're going to get away with it this time. Usually it's when I'm saying something controversial, though. So
I think you were saying something controversial and not me this time.
But anyway... you were talking about Sitchin and agreeing, but you were then talking about Lawrence Gardner and a point that he had made in regard to what Sitchin was saying.
About Yahweh,
you could repeat that.
Being two individuals, and they used the word Elohim, which is a plural,
fused
to two together and so on. And that was only two. I'm sorry I get off on some of these long tangents, because it goes to show that a point where I disagree with Zechariah. But substantially, yes, I think that he is right on. He's one of 200 in the world who are Sumerian scholars who can pick up a clay tablet and read it like you and I can read the newspaper.
I understand. Well, I have a very specific question for you then, as a follower or a scholar in the same vein as Sitchin. To some degree.
Okay.
Would you say, because my reading of Sitchin is that the Anunnaki he talks about are human looking, except for the fact that they are tall. For all intents and purposes, they look human. Whereas there is a strain of Anunnaki which is reptilian. And I don't know whether or not Sitchin talks about those two types of Anunnaki, because sometimes the reptilian strain are actually called Anunnaki, so it gets quite confusing to the people on the outside, I think.
Well, I have a particular bone to pick with David Icke on that score. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I heard it cut out. In the sense that... first of all, there is no mention of any kind of reptilian thing in any of the records or voluminous material that Sitchin has either translated or referenced. And one of his books, he has used 800 to 1,000 pieces of direct acquired information in the form of either clay tablets or manuscripts and so on. So he's pretty meticulous that way. Any of the pictures or depictions or bas-relief or statues, whether it be of Inanna in her flying garb with a box and a hose on her back, or any of the male figures, there's no suggestion of reptilian at all. And I think it's very unfortunate that, as best as I can tell, that whole notion of them being reptilian, and we don't see it in our genes that we've acquired from them. We have a reptilian piece of our brain, yes, but all hominids do that because of the way we've evolved up to the point of Homo erectus and so on, when they took Homo erectus and put their genes on him or them. But the idea is here that if, you know, David Icke, for instance, is claiming in The Biggest Secret that the Anunnaki are reptilian. Okay. And when you trace down where he got that from, it's from another book by, I'm looking on the shelf here because it's slipping my memory, David somebody, who...
there is a history of reptilian beings out there. Now,
whether the
Anunnaki are classified, the fact of the matter is we have, there are a lot of visiting races. There are some races that are supposed to be more or less part of the Earth or consider the Earth their own. Reptilians are supposedly one of those groups.
Oh, yeah.
But there is no... in other words, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Anna Hayes or Ashayana Dean, who also talks about there being a reptilian or Draco strain, but that's a different group than the Anunnaki.
Sure.
But apparently there is a mixture. There is a race that is a mixture. As we are all mixtures of various genetics at this point, because we have been visited by so many different races, actually.
Hmm.
And so there is one race which is a combination, and I think that may be where the confusion lies. But my understanding of Sitchin is the same as yours, is that they are the Anunnaki he talks about are specifically look, for all intents and purposes, human,
yeah.
Other than their height is much taller.
Oh, yeah.
Is that's your understanding as well, I assume?
Yeah. And,
okay.
And just to finish up on that, one of the reasons why I have a bone to pick with David Icke on that is that he quotes David somebody, and David somebody got it from Barbara Siniak as a channeler. And so it just points up, my position is that I want to take the history first, and then I'll take the science second, and after the science I'll take maybe contactees and then whistleblowers, and channelers come as a kind of a point of amusement way back on the end of it there someplace.
Okay, well, I actually have to intercede here in this regard, because as Camelot we've had to go down that road. In other words, we have to and I think John, you were talking about a triangulation that the military uses to figure out whether or not they've got some good information on something, and hoping that their sources for each point of the triangle basically come from different areas. And then you basically, if you get a place where they cross, then you think that you've actually got something. And this is,
right.
This is something we do at Camelot a lot, using that method of triangulation of information. And therefore, where the information comes from is really important, yes. But I think that, and you actually, Neil, you come from the Timothy Leary school. I mean, that I'm using that terminology loosely, obviously. But some of your work does harken back to some of the work of Timothy Leary. Certainly, I think you would at least agree with that. And what we have found is that... it's a very interesting dynamic, but most of the whistleblowers are also channeling on some level, and there is an interaction going on, and humans between humans and non-humans or extraterrestrial or interdimensionals or, you know, entities of various kinds, including what we term ETs, okay? And so that dialogue, you could call it a dialogue. It's a nonverbal dialogue. Sometimes it's more verbal, obviously, if the person is really awake and aware. But we're all in an inspiration. For example, Tesla is said to have had inspiration or even been motivated by certain ET contacts that he had to do some of the science that he did, and so on and so forth. So all of that is to say that, you know, and I do understand that channeling can be extremely questionable, but I just want to say that our witnesses, it's really fascinating if you go back to what they're doing and what information they're getting. A lot of them are also getting some channeled information on top of everything else. So if you triangulate the information, regardless of where it's coming from, and it all leads in one direction, regardless of whether it's channeled, how it's channeled can be an interesting point. There's the work. Wow, that was loud. there's just a lot of different directions that you can go with this kind of material. And I appreciate that you may want to work in a giggle factor when you talk about channeling. And certainly you've got to be on guard about it. But I think that, you know, most of the Bible, in essence, one could call channeled information, for better or for worse, and I think maybe for worse. So that's where you get into a really hazy area, in my opinion.
I think that I would probably only disagree with you on the point that the Bible is mostly channeled. I mean, historically and scholarly fashion, it is commonly recognized by serious scholars that most of the Old Testament, for instance, is simply a rewrite of the 3,000-year earlier Sumerian histories and Babylonian and Akkadian too, and politically, theologically, or theopolitically skewed to meet the requirements of the Jewish people to declare themselves a nation, and proprietarily the recipients of some god's beneficence.
Well, there we go. I mean, but god's, you know, a god's beneficence would end up to be, in essence, channeling. I mean, in a sense, a dialogue that one would have on a mountain with a so-called God, in essence, could be considered channeling.
Well, sure, but on the other hand, as Lawrence Gardner has clearly demonstrated, the whole business of Moses being up on the mountain and in contact with God for 40 days and 40 nights or whatever thing he went without food and water for, Moses was not really Moses, but he was Amos, a special high official, and it turns out that he was Akhenaten. There was no Mount Sinai in those days. He went up on Mount Horeb, where the Anunnaki monatomic gold processing plant was rediscovered in around 1900 by Sir Flinders Petrie, the highest... The archaeologists with the highest reputation in Europe at that particular time, and the information was suppressed. And, well, I don't want to get off on another tangent here, but...
Right, but, I mean, you're saying he went up on a mount, he went to this place, and it was basically using monatomic gold and having dialogues with the Anunnaki. Is that what Gardner says? Because I don't actually know what Gardner says.
As was said in the Old Testament, he was in contact with Jethro, who was the foreman of the monatomic plant. I don't know whether he ingested it himself while he was up there or not. He, when he came down off the mountain and found that the people were worshiping some kind of golden idol, gold again, he, it says very, very strangely that he ground it to a powder and made them eat it. It sounds like a pretty garbled explanation of the fact that he insisted that the people ingest monatomic gold. I am, by the way, ingesting it. I've been ingesting it for about over a year now, and it gives a whole new meaning to good as gold. And
okay,
John,
so are you're finding that you get inspiration, or what are you finding that it's doing for you?
I find that, well, it is meant for longevity, and I'm using it to cover my bet because I'm signed up for cryogenic suspension with Alcor. And, you know, I think it's a pretty nice planet, and this nuisance of dying and stuff is totally outmoded, and you know, new humans will probably bypass that totally, but I'm going to cover my bet this way. And it also is a superconductor at body temperature and has some pretty extraordinary properties, antigravitic and so on. And basically, to put it in a nutshell, if I had to, in one sentence, I would say that it is ideal for helping you become a servant of the people, which is what the bloodline, Grail bloodline, that MT initiated around Samaria was.
Okay, I'm really sorry to interrupt you here. We're unfortunately at the end of the show. We don't have any leeway. I really apologize here, Neil Freer. It's been delightful having you on. You're a fascinating individual, and I appreciate your sharing some of the information that you have come across in your travels. And John Waterman, if you're still with us, I'm sorry that we had an interruption there. I think you got dropped off for a bit. Thank
no
you so
problem.
Much for being part of this. It's been a fun New Year's Eve show, a bit of a smorgasbord in a way, but I hope you guys have enjoyed it, and perhaps we can do this again. When I look in my window, yeah,
there's so many people to be. Prisoner, rise and answer my question. Oh, crap.
Yeah, it's a little dark in here, ain't it, Clink, now that you've busted the light?
Where are you?
I'm right in front of you.
Yes. Now, where have you hidden the vax figurine of the Kaiser?
I've got no bloody idea what you did with your vax figurine, and I don't care.
You are the prisoner!
That's right, and as such, I expect some answers out of you. Now, where did you put my stash of freeze-dried food?
We, ate it.
You ate it?
It was quite good.
I'm sure it was. I'll have you know that was freeze-dried food from the freeze-dry guy. That food rehydrates faster, stores longer, is nutritionally superior to, and tastes better than any other long-term storage food available. Now, let me out of here.
If you could get us some more, perhaps we could negotiate.
Yeah, perhaps I'll just confiscate your keys, Klaus, and let myself out the front door.
But wait.
I'm busy.
Get your own supply of delicious long-term storable food by dialing 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Are you looking for an essential survival tool you didn't know existed? Introducing two new devices from thelibertyman.com. The Paratrooper Bicycle is the same bike issued to U.S. paratroopers in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's a folding bike, specifically engineered for airdrop from military aircraft and is olive drab in color. The Swiss LX Bicycle is the same bicycle issued to the U.S. Secret Service and Special Ops for use in covert operations. This folding bicycle is matte black. Just unfold the bike, secure the four quick-release levers, put air in the tires, and you're on your way. These are full-size mountain bikes with full-size 26-inch standard wheels, and they cost less than off-the-shelf standard quality mountain bikes. The bikes fold to 12 by 28 by 36 inches in under 30 seconds without tools. This bike weighs in at a mere 29 pounds. Its compact size allows for storage anywhere. The Paratrooper and Swiss LX bicycles have patented technology not available from any other company. To place your orders, call 800-592-9543 day or night. For more information or to place orders online, go to www.thelibertyman.com.
The time is now. As the walls are closing in on America, Republic Magazine is a beacon of light guiding those that fight for freedom and the restoration of America. Republic Magazine is the ultimate activist tool. Republic Magazine digs in deep to expose the lies and offers real solutions from the experts. No other publication in America offers the real news like Republic Magazine. Get copies to give to friends, family, and neighbors, or simply order a subscription for yourself at republicmagazine.tv. Get informed and stay informed with Republic Magazine. the ultimate resource for your fight against the New World Order. Claim your free digital copy now or order a print subscription online at www.republicmagazine.tv. That's republicmagazine.tv. Or call them toll-free at 800-873-7000.